This is the John Clayton Show.
Brought to you by Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
And good morning, everybody. Good to be with you again. Sorry about last week. I had to take care of my wife. She's been battling a little bit here and still battling. So, again, thank you for your patience, your prayers, everything. And, of course, good to be back for the next 3 hours. Plenty of football talk, a little basketball, maybe some baseball. And we'll get going here. Of course, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with some headlines. Well, I guess the big story out of New England is Tom Brady. Tom Brady is listed as questionable. Getting a few more details about that thumb, he apparently needed 4 stitches. When he hit it on one of the teammates, he ended up having a lot of blood come out. So yesterday they postponed his press conferences, and from Wednesday to Friday, he was able to do some practicing on Friday. Expected to play, but you'd have to think he's going to be a little bit affected by this because, again, this is Tom Brady, as great as he is, but you never know how that thumb is going to affect his throwing or any of that nature. Still, he is going to be able to play. He'll start the game. We'll see how he does. Husky basketball this afternoon, 3 o'clock. Big game against Colorado on the road. The team, of course, they lost to Utah, which puts them with their third loss in the conference. But overall, they've been a big surprise, major surprise team that has done so well. In baseball, boy, it's been really slow as far as going back free agency and all that stuff. And now you got the players upset with Rob Manfred, the commissioner, because it looks like they're going to implement a pitch speed count to try to make sure that the game's going to move a little bit faster. But, of course, it hasn't moved anything faster in free agency. Very, very slow period. Back to football, the NFL has said that the Oakland Raiders did not have any problem with the Rooney Rule when they hired John Gruden. How could they say that? I mean, John Gruden, according to Mark Davis, was hired before the last regular season game, or like the game was over. I mean, they made him the offer. He took the 10-year, $100 million deal. On Wednesday, they interviewed 2 people as candidates to comply with the Rooney Rule when the guy was already hired. I don't know. That one sounds a little bit shaky. You got to get tougher with that Rooney Rule because it's important to get minority coaches advancing in this game. And those are our headlines. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's get going with JB in Renton. Hey, JB.
Hey, Mr. Clayton, fine Saturday morning to you, my friend. How
yes,
you doing
thank you.
Today?
Good to be with you.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, hey, you know what? Oh, your thoughts and prayers is with me, my friend. I hope everything goes well with your wife. Okay?
I hope so. We've been together 30 years.
Yeah, and 30 more you shall have, my friend.
I hope so.
30 more you shall have. Hey, you know, that Rooney Rule, remember we talked about that a couple of weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
Just pay the fine and pick the guy that you want. You know.
Well, in this case, they didn't have to pay the fine, and they picked the guy that they wanted.
And, yeah, they got the guy that they wanted. They didn't have to pay the fine, huh? Oh.
No, I mean, I can't believe that there's not more of an outcry on this. Listen, if you want to hire John Gruden, hire John Gruden. But again, you have to go through the process of interviewing minorities and advancing minorities. I think that's a very important thing. There's not enough good offensive advancement in the minorities for that. And that's like, okay, let's get going. You credit the Raiders and Mark Davis. I mean, Reggie McKenzie has done a great job as the general manager. They've done some good things in the past, but in this one, it's like it's almost making a mockery. But again, that's one of the problems that you have in the coaching profession because, like, for example, if you're going to hire a college coach, you almost have to make him the offer before the end of the season and not comply with the Rooney Rule. And, so there's some things that need to be worked out. But this one, I thought, I mean, it's a clear violation.
Oh, definitely, Mr. Clayton. Didn't they say to some effect that talked to T. Martin, the mm-hmm. offensive coordinator with the USC?
Right.
Yeah.
And their tight end coach.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're one of those two guys, why would you even accept the interview? Because you're not getting a chance. I mean, the job was already done.
We shall find out, Mr. Clayton. Now, I know the first part of the association was investigating or something mm-hmm. to that effect. Did they come up with any findings on that?
Well, surprisingly, they didn't have as much of an outcry as I thought they would.
Yeah, because I thought they were the ones that were supposed to, be like the the watchers of that situation, right, as far as the NFL was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, well, you know, hey, you know, they need to tighten that up a little bit. You know, I understand they wanted Blue Daddy back. He's an icon in the Bay Area.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, that's how it goes. You know, that's just how it's going these days with that. And I understand what you're saying. Somebody needs to police that.
Yes.
They need to police that, especially in the NFL. But let's get to a couple of those games, Mr. Clayton. Last week was a heartbreaker for the Saints.
Mm-hmm.
You know, tough game. Real tough to lose. And in that way, you know, now, moving forward, Drew Brees, he said that he wants to come back. He kind of talked in a way like he gave up his leverage. What would be the outcome with that with Drew Brees?
I think you've seen it in the past. I don't think he wants to go anyplace else. He wants to be, you know, with this team. But you kind of get the idea that this could lead to a holdout if they don't come to the number that he wants, and you've seen that before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, what would be a feasible number for him right now?
27.5.
What, Monday after the game?
Yeah, 27.5, I think.
About 27?
Mm-hmm.
Would you give him 2 years, Mr. Clay?
Yeah, I would. Two or three. You almost need that for cap purposes.
Yeah, yeah. If you can get him for 2 years and stuff, because, you know, there's a couple of things as far as how is the Saints' outlook for as far as the cap is concerned?
No, it's always going to be tight. I mean, it certainly helps when they had the draft that they had. You know, you get four rookie starters who make the all-rookie team. You know, that helps because it gets you a little bit younger and fills up some spots. But remember, they have to rewrite so many contracts. They have so much dead money from bad decisions that they made that that puts them in a real tough spot. So it's not perfect, that's for sure.
Yeah, I know, man. I mean, especially when you got a franchise quarterback sitting in your wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to take up a portion of that cap. Now, let's go to them games right quick, Mr. Clayton. Philadelphia and Minnesota. Looking at the outcome of this game and stuff, both defenses are pretty tough defenses. The quarterbacks are questionable. How do you see this playing out? I think Philadelphia has those tight ends. Now, I'm not really crazy about their quarterback. Now, that was Carson Wentz?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But I don't know if he can get it done like say Carson Wentz can get it done. How do you look at this game turning out?
Well, I look at it as even though Philadelphia is at home, I think Minnesota's the better team. You know, I think they have a better defense. I think they have a better quarterback, you know, because Case Keenum will try to get the ball downfield a little bit more than Nick Foles. And, you know, you can kind of balance that out. Now, Philly has the better running game, and they do have home field. I just kind of like, I mean, Minnesota to me seems like it's one of those teams of destiny. Everything seems to be going right for them. I mean, they get the big play at the right time. So, I just think in the end that's the team that's going to win.
All right. Let's go to the AFC side right quickly. Pittsburgh. Mike Tomlin getting rid of his offensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
The guy, I mean, they put up points.
Yeah, they did. I mean, the second half of the season, they got to that 30-point average that they always want.
Yeah. I thought Todd Haley, is it just a case of him and Ben Roethlisberger not getting along?
Well, I think you can see that there's been a couple off-the-field things with Todd that I think have been irritating. And when you let a coach as talented as Todd go into the last year of his contract without an extension, you feel there's something going on. And so I don't know if it's going to work because I think that Todd does a good job with Ben. You know, that was expected that there's going to be, you know, some battles and stuff like that. And I'm sure there is because both have very strong personalities. But I guess they felt it was time to part. I mean, they underachieved at different points of the this season, and I guess he pays the price for that.
Wait, you know, and I understand that, you know, some instances the offense didn't put out the production that they were looking for, but don't you also look at on the defensive side of the ball? I mean, they give the 40-some-odd points to the Jacksonville.
But remember, I mean, some of that was Ben giving up turnovers.
Yeah.
It's almost like, you know, when they lost 30-9, you know, Ben had back-to-back pick sixes. That's 14 points. And so it was a 16-point game, not a 30-9 game.
Oh, yeah, that's true, too. He did throw some bad picks. But that's indicative to the quarterback. Would you say that's due to the play caller?
I mean, play caller, he calls the plays, but he doesn't necessarily execute the plays. There had to be some kind of a rift a little bit. I mean, for example, you know, Ben would love to have had a quarterback sneak, and I think he's only missed one quarterback sneak on a 4th-and-1 once in his career. He's like 17 for 18, and he didn't have the ability to call an audible to be able to do that. And so you kind of think that maybe he didn't have the freedoms that he would like. And if that's the case, then you can see there's going to be some difficulties.
Todd Haley, I think, should get a job, Mr. Clayton. I think I know he's kind of honorary. I remember him back over at Kansas City. He's kind of honorary of a guy. But he's a real good offensive coordinator.
He is. I agree.
He can call plays, and he can generate a good offense. I was impressed with what he did with the Steelers and all the firepower Steelers had over there this year.
Right.
I was really impressed. Yeah. Now, let's look at this game with New England and Jacksonville. I think it's all predicated on Leonard Fournette having the ability to run the ball against New England's defense. Now, a lot of people don't give New England credit, but their defense has played real good football in
Very
the
good.
Last four or five games of the regular season and also in that playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, I love Jacksonville's defense, but I think you can run the ball at them. Against their defensive line.
You can
run the ball at them. Now, they're good on the back end. I love their back end. But also, with Rob Gronkowski against some of those safeties, Barry Church and those boys, I think you can make pay dirt. Now, the linebackers are fast for Jacksonville.
Yes.
I mean, geez, they got some speed at their linebacker position. But I still see New England, Tom Brady and
it's Tom Brady. It's
game.
Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in Foxborough. I know it's happened that they've lost, but remember, they've lost because they've been there so many times. And remember, this is still Blake Bortles. I just have trouble thinking that Blake Bortles can go in there and have a great type of game. I struggle with that.
I understand that. I mean, I understand what you're saying. You just can't depend on him to come out there and give you consecutive games like he did in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see that. And is Matt Patricia getting a job?
Yeah, he's going to get the Detroit job.
What about Josh McDaniel?
Josh is going to get the Indianapolis job.
Wow. Nobody went back after Jim Harbaugh? Because I know Harbaugh...
No, I think Indianapolis did, but he wasn't going anywhere. He was staying at Michigan. I heard that Jim Irsay was trying like crazy, but he wasn't going to win that battle.
What do you think about the hire in Chicago?
Curious. I mean, because, and again, this shows you where there's too many firings of coaches. And what I mean by that is that, here's a guy, he's only called plays half a year, and he gets a head coaching job. Do you really know if he's going to be, it's almost like the Ben McAdoo hiring.
Yeah.
Because, Ben didn't call a lot of plays when he was with the Packers because, it was the job of Mike McCarthy to do that.
Now, the one thing I give him, he kept Vic Fangio around as far as the defensive coordinator, so he's got that side pretty much shored up as far as that's concerned. Now, I understand when you become a head coach, is he going to call his own plays?
I would imagine, That's one of the reasons you hire the guy.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Very curious move. Hey, JB, got to run.
All right, Mr. Clayton, have a good weekend. We'll talk next Sunday, my friend.
Thank you. We're off and going here. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Jim in SeaTac. Hey, Jim.
Hey, John, how you doing?
Doing well. How about you?
Good. Can we have a moment of silence for the Saints fan that suffers?
Yeah, it's pretty tough.
I never liked their uniforms. I always thought they were Bush League. The only uglier uniforms, in my opinion, are the Steeler throwback and the Packer throwback. But I digress. Could we have a moratorium on talking about the Seattle Seahawks offensive line? Why don't we wait until they get an offensive line, and then we could talk about it?
No, it's put this way. You can't stop it because, again, that's one of the big issues, and it has been the big issue the last couple of years. So it's always going to be on the agenda.
I know. I don't know what's worse, their offensive line, the Hawk offensive line, or the Raiders defensive backs. What's worse?
Raiders defensive backs. They were
terrible. I'm not going to argue with you on that.
I mean, $7 million for $7 million a year for Sean Smith. I mean, two draft choices that really hardly got on the field. It was pretty bad.
Yeah, that was a killer. And, you know, if they could have just plugged a couple of leaks, but we'll see what happens. I mean, I don't, you know, me, I just hope they win their next game.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if they have a 10-game losing streak or they're defending a world championship. I just want them to win their next game. And one of the things about the Vegas move, I think it helps the team, is they can backload a lot of the contracts, right?
Right.
Because there's no state tax in Nevada.
Yeah, but that doesn't play into the salary cap.
Oh, it doesn't?
Nope.
So the Khalil, obviously, that's going to be killer. You know, when, and you've been around and you've watched the whole thing, and, you know, I always hear this, the Raiders belong in Oakland. The Raiders belong in Oakland, and I'm about 4 or 5 years younger than you, and I in high school, when the Raiders, I hate the A's, I hate them, because the Raiders would always run out on that dirt infield, and here it is 40 years later, the Raiders are the only team that has to run out on that dirt infield. And in my opinion, the city of Oakland has never been major league. And what I mean by that is you see the Steelers venue and you see that beautiful sign of the front four. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know what I'm talking about?
Right.
You see the steel curtain, Greenwood, and Holmes. And it was like, it looked like a professional sign painter. And I'm sure there's a story. You know the story behind that.
Uh-huh. Now, what's it got?
But the Raiders would have this sign, and it looked like we will work. You know, the ones where you see we'll work for food. It say we're number one, spray painted on a piece of cardboard with black paint, and that would be the Raiders signs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fans would bring those kind of signs. And it's never been major league. They've had a chance to redo their stadium. The love of their life went away to L.A., came back. The city did absolutely nothing. And here it is 40 years later, and the Raiders are running onto the dirt infield of the Oakland A's.
Yeah, and the stadium is just terrible. I mean, it's a dump.
It is. And when they went down to Mexico, I mean, what's more of a dump, the stadium in Mexico City or the one in Oakland?
I can't talk about that stadium in Mexico City because I've never been there, but I've been to down in Oakland to see that stadium, and it's just terrible.
Yeah. Well, you know, at least we didn't have time to mourn the 6-10 season because of the hiring of Gruden, and we'll just see how it goes. You never know how people are going to work together, but I mean, as long as they win, and it's not a guarantee that Gruden's going to bring them back. It looks great on paper,
mm-hmm.
but they got to get some defensive backs that could cover.
Right, and they got to get better play calling. That play calling last year was just terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, it was
yeah.
bad. You would admit that, right? Why they
yeah.
made the
oh,
change
gosh.
Of offensive
and, you know, I noticed it. It was like the third game when they played Washington on that Sunday Night Football. And, you know, with those deep threats that they have, because the receivers are so productive usually when they don't drop the ball, and with the tight end is a good pass-catching tight end, the thing is, you figure you could just throw a little swing pass to the back. He could catch it and run for 5 or 7 yards or whatever it was. But when you had told me before that people could, it was a high school offense and they saw it coming, I remember there'd be a little short pass to Washington and he was met by a linebacker, Carrington.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like he didn't have a chance to make a yard. And usually, you know, a little swing pass to the running back is going to be good for something.
Right.
And it was very frustrating because that play was blown up before it happened. And the other team seemed to be able to throw those little short passes over the middle to the running back against the Raiders, but the Raiders couldn't. They couldn't do it.
Their defense was,
I mean, very,
but,
very
hey, when you go the entire offseason and you add two draft choices that don't play because of injuries pretty much, and then you come back
yeah.
and you're the only player that they signed was Jelani Jenkins for 1 year, $1 million, and they cut him. I mean, how are you
yeah.
going to get better when you don't add to the defense? And remember, to clear out money for getting a deal done for Derek Carr and for Gabe Jackson, you know, they let a lot of guys go in free agency.
Right, right. Who would you take with the 10th pick? They get the 9th or the 10th pick. If you were them, who would you take?
I'd take somebody in the secondary. I mean, let's put it this way. It better not be an offensive player. It better be somebody on defense.
Right. That's what I was thinking, but I don't know. There could be a great running back on the 10th round.
Yeah, but again, it's like they need defense more than they need a running back. Hey, Jim, thank you for the phone call.
All right, thanks.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Dave in Shoreline. Hey, Dave.
Hi, what are the chances of the Hawks playing on either Sunday, Monday, or Thursday night football next year?
I think reasonably good. I mean, it may not be two games, maybe just one, and you know they're going to play on Sunday night football and probably get a Thursday game. So, you know, they're still very popular. The ratings of the team still is very good. So I think, you know, the disadvantage they're going to have is they're not going to be able to get as many late starts as they have. Because remember, they went through the whole year and they didn't have a 10 a.m. start on the East Coast. That was a big break. I mean, Arizona had five. And so they're going to lose a little bit of that advantage. And so, you know, that's why they do need to probably get a little bit younger. All right. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Coming up next, get together with Doug Ferrara of the Bleacher Report. Coming up, it's John Clayton.
You're listening to the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com. Now, more John Clayton.
Always good to catch up with Doug Farrar. And, of course, we are now heading into the championship weekend. And a weekend, I know, Doug, that when you were trying to preview this season, definitely on the Bleacher Report, the top quarterbacks. And that's why you had Nick Foles, Case Keenum, and Blake Bortles as your final four quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah. I actually predicted a Nick Foles, Blake Bortles Super Bowl. That's what I did. Sure.
I mean, you had to do that. And clearly, you know that Bortles will have to beat Tom Brady.
What's that?
You know that Bortles will have to beat Tom Brady.
Yeah. But fortunately for Bortles, he doesn't have to beat Tom Brady. Jacksonville's defense does. And they have the people who can do that.
They do. But what can Belichick do, which I think he will, to be able to stop Bortles?
Well, the thing about the Jaguars, they're vulnerable. I mean, they're great if you're running three or four wide receivers and doing standard route concepts like that. They play cover one, cover three, and they can just clamp you down because they have very aggressive cornerbacks. Ramsey is very much like Sherman. A.J. Bouye is maybe the best technician at his position in the NFL. Fast linebackers, safeties speed-wise are a weakness, but if you go three and four wide receivers at them, they will shut you down. What has been discovered about the Jaguars is that if you run 12 personnel, one running back, two tight ends, and you're creative with the use of your tight ends, especially if you do run action, if you pass but you're run blocking and you run play action, you can force their linebackers into misdirection situations and really come up with big gains. And if you watch what the Patriots do with especially Gronkowski and, you know, Dwayne Allen, whoever their tight ends are, they'll line Gronkowski up at fullback and then flare him out. They'll run two tight ends to one side in different route concepts. Gronkowski's hard to cover anyway. Miles Jack and Tobin Smith, Jacksonville's linebackers, are athletic enough to cover. But especially if Jacksonville's in their base defense, they also have Paul Posluszny on the field. Posluszny is a great player, but he should not be covering tight ends. He's a stationary linebacker, not a cover guy. And you see teams getting advantages on Jacksonville out of two tight end sets through the middle of the field, and the Patriots are used to attacking defenses that way. So if I were Jacksonville, I'd play more of a hybrid, more man-to-man outside, maybe put, you know, where Gronkowski goes, maybe Jalen Ramsey goes. You know, we'll see what their matchups dictate. But I would not – this would not be an opponent where I'd play the typical Jacksonville cover one, cover three, occasional blitz defense. They're going to have to switch it up.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is going to be the downfall of Tom Brady with the thumb injury, or do you think it's going to be a little exaggerated?
I'm not sure about the thumb injury, but if you go back to Brady's December, where I believe he had six touchdown passes and five interceptions, December was not good for him. I mean, against the Titans, he played better. But in the month of December, he played Miami, Buffalo, and he played a bunch of teams that were able to get pressure with four and five defenders and play really aggressive man coverage to disrupt the timing of the receiver's routes, because that's a precision timing-based offense. Everything is the receiver breaks when Brady hits his back foot. You're supposed to be here. You're supposed to be there. You know, the defender does this, you do that, and they run a bunch of option routes and things like this. But if you're able to get pressure on Brady up the middle, because he steps up in the pocket, he doesn't go side to side. He's not a mobile guy. He's 40. So if you can get pressure up the middle and disrupt the timing of his receiver's routes with aggressive either press or man coverage, you can upset him, and that's what happened to him in December. Certainly the Jaguars with, you know, they can put Calais Campbell inside as well as outside, Malik Jackson, Marcel Darius, who's more of a run stopper but can get pressure. This is a team that can get pressure with four. They can flare their linebackers down into zones. They can clamp down on Brandon Cooks and Danny Amendola and all those guys with just really aggressive coverage, aggressive to the point of penalties. And, you know, you're not going to bottle Gronk up, but I think this defense has exactly what it takes to upset Brady. They just have to be maybe a bit more aggressive with their game plan than they usually are.
Mm-hmm, no doubt. On the flip side, do you like Case Keenum more than Nick Foles? Nick Foles more than Case Keenum, or neither?
You know, I think at this point it's a misnomer to think of Case Keenum as one of these game manager backup guys. I mean, he's not Aaron Rodgers, but he's been tremendously effective in the offense he's been given. He's top 10 in Football Outsiders DVOA metrics among quarterbacks, which is opponent adjusted. When I remember when he played against the Buccaneers, it was early in his starting career this year, and the Buccaneers, they have a horrible pass defense. He was throwing deep balls all over the place. I mean, if you watch that touchdown reception to Diggs that won against the Saints, he was getting pressure at the side. He had to take two steps up in the pocket and make a bang-on throw. Yeah, Marcus Williams messed up on the tackle, but, you know, to say here's, you know, Case Keenum and Nick Foles and Blake Bortles, and they're all sort of in the same pool, I think Keenum has transcended that. I think he's, you know, kind of on the Andy Dalton plus level. I think he's done really well. Foles, I mean, that's a guy who, if you pressure him, he falls apart. He's great on three-step drops and quick passes and RPOs and things like that. And they're going to run all those things. But if you pressure him in more of a traditional passing offense, he can't handle it. It was the same in college. So I mean,
it seems to me he's become more of a check down Charlie guy.
Place, just a different level of play.
Yeah. But he's become a kind of a more of a check down guy than anything else.
To a point, but if you watch his tape, there will be, I would say, 3 to 6 passes per game that are 15 yards or more. And he'll complete 3 to 4 of them. You know, it's not going to be bombs away, but in the structure of that offense, he's more than a complimentary player. And when you look at that particular matchup, I don't know that Philadelphia has the cornerbacks to handle Thielen and Diggs, especially when you put them on the same side. If you make Diggs the outside receiver and Thielen the slot guy, and you run all sorts of crossers and switch releases and whatnot downfield, that's very hard to cover. So, you know, whether Keenum is quote-unquote great or not, within that system, he's tremendously effective.
No question. So what do you see as being the outcomes of the games, and who's going to the Super Bowl?
it's funny. If it was anyone else but the Patriots, I would pick the Jaguars.
Yeah.
Because I think that Doug Marrone has dialed in what works for Blake Bortles, which is run on first down, get Bortles in second to six, second and four, favorable second and third down situations. Then you run heavy play action. And occasionally you let Bortles run, but really you want him as a play action quarterback. And certainly they have the run game. Their offensive line is underrated, and the defense is spectacular. I just think that Belichick is going to look at that defense, and he's going to come up with something. And we don't know what it is yet, but he's going to align something on offense. I think it'll be a real close game, but I have the Patriots. And I think the Vikings, I think their defense is too good for Nick Foles, and their offense is too good for Philly secondary. So I see it Vikings and Patriots in Super Bowl 52.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm with you 100%. And now, of course, that'll be kind of a fascinating kind of game. So what's your reaction to all the coaching changes with the Seahawks?
I made my feelings about Tom Cable fairly well known. Talking to former and current offensive linemen and offensive line coaches, and nobody really knew what was going on in Seattle. Defenders have said that Cable's blocking keys are so easy to pick up, they kind of know where everything's going. Mike Solari is a career guy. He's someone to be taken seriously. They'll have more power blocking options. Bevel for Schottenheimer, I think Bevel got more imaginative in the passing game and deserved maybe another chance. I don't agree at all with firing Chris Richard. I mean, I don't know what's going on in the meeting rooms. Maybe he wasn't, quote-unquote, reaching the players. I don't know that. I wouldn't speculate. But Ken Norton, to me, and, you know, Ken Norton's a great guy. Every time you talk to him, you want to run through a wall. I wonder if he's more a motivator than a tactician. And Chris Richard was really into the X's and O's. Defense was very injured and still played pretty well. I'm not really on board with the Richard firing. I think Cable needed to go. I think, honestly, Cable may have cost this team at least one Super Bowl in the Pete Carroll run. And why he lasted this long, I don't know. With Schottenheimer, we'll see. That's a mixed bag because he hasn't had a quarterback the level of Russell Wilson. And it's like when Kyle Shanahan went to Atlanta and all of a sudden he had all these really great skill players and he was able to bring out his total offensive philosophy. Schottenheimer could be that, or it could be, you know, Rob Boris with the with the Rams in 2016, where it's just unimaginative, and, you know, we'll see. So I'd say Cable, getting rid of him and replacing him with Solari is a plus. I'd say Bevel and Schottenheimer is probably a net, you know, wash. And I don't agree with their firing of Richard at all. I think he deserved another chance.
Tell me where you spotted where things were going wrong with Tom Cable and the blocking scheme.
I think the 2015 season? It was when he had Drew Nowak for the first seven games. And he said, oh, okay, I'm just going to, you know, I find it hard to evaluate college offensive linemen, so I'm just going to take defensive guys and guys who haven't. And he put them at center, and he had Nowak making the line calls. And in the games Nowak started, I believe Seattle was 3-4. And they turned it around and they put Patrick Lewis in at center. But, you know, more than the blocking schemes, because Cable's blocking schemes are fairly vanilla inside-outside zone, I don't think it's the schemes that killed him. I think his player evaluation was one of the worst at any position group in the NFL over the last 5 years, from, you know, all the defensive line conversions to looking at Jermaine Ifedi as a first-round talent, when Ifedi at Texas A&M in his last season there gave up the most pressures of any offensive tackle in the NCAA. I think his player evaluation got in the way of whatever he was trying to do as a, you know, blocking scheme guy, and his blocking schemes weren't imaginative enough to make up for the lack of talent, which was also his fault. So it was kind of a perpetual motion in the wrong direction.
Yeah, and of course it's unfortunate because this team paid the price for it. So is there enough talent on the offensive line that Solari can fix this?
I don't think so. I mean, you want to re-sign Duane Brown on a 2 or 3 year deal. Justin Britt is a above average center. I think there's talent in Jokel. I remember week one of the 2016 season when they signed Jokel. I went back and watched his tape. First game of the 2016 season, Jacksonville was playing Green Bay, and you know how good Mike Daniels is.
Yeah.
The Packers 3-4 end who slips inside. Jokel handled Mike Daniels pretty well the whole game. So there is potential there. You know, Ifedi, with the technique lapses and the penalties, I'm not buying it. I think maybe they put Ethan Pokic outside because he's not strong enough. He's going to lose strength battles at guard. Maybe he's flexible enough to be a tackle. And I think overall, I mean, most offensive line coaches will tell you the importance of continuity. I know Cable didn't believe in that, and Carroll had always said continuity is overrated. I don't think it is. I think Solari is more of a traditionalist. He's run some very good offensive lines, specifically in Kansas City and San Francisco. And you'd be like, what about when he was here in 2008 and 2009? Well, that was kind of the nadir of the Tim Ruskell era when Walter Jones was unfortunately in his last legs, and he didn't have a lot of talent. So I think the offensive line, they're going to spend on it. I know Schneider said at last year's combine that they got too young on the line. I think they're, you know, they're going to offload some contracts, as you know, and I think they're going to have to put more, and certainly they put draft capital into it, but they're going to have to make some, I would say, mid-sized splashes in free agency if they want to turn this line around in a hurry, because Cable, it's kind of like the Mariners after Jack Cerenzik left. It's like, well, what do you have? Not a lot. This is going to be another rebuild. I think that line is a couple years away from being really good, but at least they're on the right path.
Yeah. What on defense, do you think they'll be able to get Sheldon Richardson back? And will Earl Thomas and Richard Sherman be back?
I think Earl will be – I can't imagine Carroll letting Earl go. Sheldon Richardson may outprice himself. Hopefully he realizes that as a three technique in this defense, it's the best possible situation for him, as opposed to the year before when the Jets tried to play him an outside linebacker, and that was a disaster. You know, Sherm, that's a tough one. The cap hit is, what, $7 million this year?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it more?
I think it's a little bit more.
What do they save if they cut him?
I mean, I can look at the contract here, but problem is that is Shaquille Griffin a number one corner? But then what you also don't know, how Sherman going to come back from the injury?
I don't think he's there yet, but I think he's close.
Yeah, he's good. That was a great acquisition.
You know, you can do one of two things. You can gamble on Sherman coming back totally healthy, and he would finally have that bookend on the other side that has his kind of potential, which he's never really had. And I know if you look at the Jaguars right now with Ramsey and Boye, that's what Pete's always wanted, is two cornerbacks who can just lock down either side of the field. The Vikings want that with Xavier Rhodes and Trey Waynes, and Waynes hasn't quite lived up to it. So they may look at it and say, okay, we're going to give Richard one more year, and Shaquille Griffin will continue to show his potential, and then we'll have two lockdown guys. Or they say, because we don't really know, is this a reload or a rebuild? If it's a rebuild, I can't see Sherman sticking around.
Mm-hmm.
And then they say Griffin's our number one guy. It's a defense in transition, and there we go. I think it's 50-50 on Sherm. I'm not quoting any inside sources there. It's just kind of my feeling.
By the way, it's about 8.8 savings if they cut Richard Sherman.
That's a lot. That's a lot for a guy pushing 30 with a major injury. So.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to see. I don't think it's a sure thing that he's back. I think Earl's a sure thing. I would hope that Richardson is smart enough to realize what kind of effect he can have in this particular defense, especially in year two, because he was amazing against the run, had some good pressures. I think a couple more years in Pete's front, and this guy could be seriously all-pro level because he's that good.
No doubt. So what all do you have on Bleacher Report?
We are, right now, John, we are finishing up the positional rankings. Each position, our scouts are doing rankings and scouting reports for every position. This year we added slot receivers and slot defenders, and we're cranking through that. I'll have a Super Bowl preview up. I'll be in Minneapolis, as I know you will. Hopefully we'll be able to say hi. I have a Super Bowl article, and then a whole bunch of free agency and draft stuff coming after that. So we're staying busy.
That'll be good stuff. That's Doug Farrar, Bleacher Report. Thanks for joining us. I'll see you in another week.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thanks. Doug Farrar, come back. Get your phone calls, 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, more John Clayton on 710 ESPN Seattle and 710sports.com.
866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. Let's go to Tara in Mercer Island. Tara, how are you?
I'm great. Good to have you back.
It's good to be back. Missed you last week.
What running backs do you see the Seahawks going after in the draft?
hard to tell. I think that, you know they have the 18th pick, and the likelihood is because they don't have picks in rounds 2 and 3, they'll be trading down several times and probably end up in the second round. And so now you have to start looking at who's going to emerge as the 4th or 5th back, because I think there'll be 2 or 3 drafted in the first round. I don't think that they're going to go overboard, but they have to do something. I mean, they don't have enough right now as far as with Thomas Rawls. I don't know if he's going to be back or not. I mean, you know, that's a decision they still have to make. You know, you still have C.J. Procise there, but, I mean, your top two backs are Mike Davis, number 2, and Chris Carson, number 1. And so, you know, what you have to be evaluating if you're going to be John Schneider, you know, is it better to fit some defensive players in? Because remember, they're going to take more hits on defense than they are in the offense. And so the priority is going to be making sure that the defensive line doesn't drop off if Michael Bennett, Cliff Avril, and Sheldon Richardson aren't here.
Yeah, there are going to be a lot of changes on the defense. I think the offense is going to stay pretty much the same because a lot of the core young guys are there. And also, a lot of our running backs are really injury prone, like Thomas Rawls.
Right. C.J. Procise, for sure.
And Chris Carson, I think, was injured in the rookie OTA. So maybe in free agency.
But see, here's the caveat on free agency is that they can't do too much in free agency if they're going to be losing big-name players like Richardson and Jimmy Graham and that, because what happens is that you lose compensatory picks. And if you are revamping the roster like they're going to in the next 2 years, you need as many draft choices as you possibly can. And remember, the compensatory pick works this way. You know, you get, if you lose more than you sign in unrestricted free agency, you get a compensatory pick. But let's say, for example, that you lose Jimmy Graham and he gets $7 million. If you sign a $6 million running back in free agency, it's a wash. You don't get that decent draft choice. You have to be very cautious about that.
And John and Pete know exactly what they're doing. I have a lot of trust in them.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that. They are very good at this. Hey, Tara, thank you for the phone call.
My call.
Okay. 866-979-ESPN, 206-421-ESPN. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.